This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
Happy Monday. I hope you had a nice weekend. Friday night, nice time. I had a big show at Bell South Banquets out in Aurora. So thanks for everybody who came out and saw the show. We'll talk more about that later, including the woman that felt up my left butt cheek.
What?
Yeah, I'm just as shocked as you are because, frankly, I've, you know, got a flat butt. You know, it's not that easy to find. At 610, we have deep concern for the people of Louisiana, the Baton Rouge area in particular. 20 inches of rain in 24 hours. And in one of we would refer to them as suburbs, one of the parishes. And that floodwater has not crested in most areas yet. So that could actually get worse. If you've not seen the video, it's another one of those thank God you're here, not there kind of moments, because those people are going through hell. You know, you think you got a lot of rain in a couple of hours. We had 2 inches of rain Friday night. They are getting absolutely, they have gotten absolutely pummeled, and it continues. Milwaukee, a police shooting that appears to be justified, though the police have not yet shown the video. They say that has proof that the kid that was shot had a gun turned towards a cop before shots were fired. We'll get into that in a little bit. And the campaigns continue, of course, with Donald Trump today making his speech on ISIS, where he's going to clear up everything. He wasted more time this weekend focusing on the media. The media, by the way, that made him. Nobody would know Donald Trump's name if he hadn't been sucking up to the media for the last 30 years. Now the media is the enemy. So Trump will do his ISIS game plan today. I think that's a midday speech. But there's all sorts of... In the year of you can't make it up, there is more coming from the Trump campaign, including the one voice that he listens to being out of the country, Ivanka, on vacation overseas with the alleged girlfriend of Vladimir Putin. Thank you. Good night.
All right.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.
And that's not part of your show from Friday.
No, these are actual things that are happening. And Paul Manafort listed on a secret ledger amongst the bad guys of the Ukraine for cash payments. Oh, and then we have the Clinton side of the equation saying, yeah, that whole email thing, we should just move on. No, we don't move on. We don't move on from that or the foundation, because we need to find the criminals and the liars and then expose them for who they are. Sadly, it appears it's the two people running for president still. At 6:12, I could use a little break already. So let's go to Paul Conrad, who's standing by.
Hey!
I think he knows his microphone. I don't think he knows his microphone, huh?
All right.
He's probably still getting dressed.
Is this mic on?
Hey, Paul, it's Steve.
Steve Cochran.
How are you, buddy?
Yeah, good. You?
You're the ultimate professional. That's why I like you. How was your weekend? Did you have a nice weekend?
I had a very, very nice weekend. Thank you.
I was thinking about you because it's back to school time.
Oh, yeah.
And with all of your kids,
yeah.
I'm just curious, how much do you spend annually on back to school supplies?
Well, this is the thing.
Now, just roughly, get rough.
I'm going to guess somewhere between $7,000 and $12,000.
That seems right. That seems absolutely right. And let's go through the grades the kids will be entering.
Let's not do that.
You don't know, do you?
Well, I'm going to get some of them right. I might get some of them wrong. I'm going to go. I've got my youngest is going into kindergarten.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. That's adorable.
That is. She's a nice one, too. She bites still, which worries me a little bit, but.
What's your name?
Elsa.
Elsa.
Elsa and then... Schmelsa Bobelsa Evangelini Bambini Conrad.
It's a long name.
Yep.
Second youngest?
Von Zygmunt. He is. Now, this is where I'm not sure. I believe he's going into, he's 8 years old.
He's eight, so that'd be a third grader. And he's a little terror.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the guy that's
going to be trouble for him. Nice guy, but you turn your back for 2 seconds, your house is on fire, your car is stolen,
This is the child you're most likely to have suffocate you with a pillow in your sleep.
Any day now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Second
nice
oldest?
Guy. Second oldest is going into.
This would be a fifth grader, wouldn't it?
No, I think sixth.
Sixth grade.
She's 11.
And she's a lovely young
girl. Oh, it's the nicest person on the planet.
She's just trying to keep the family together.
She's nice.
Yes.
And the braces are coming off sometime in the next month or so.
Oh, how exciting.
And my oldest is 13. He's going into eighth grade. I know that one.
Now he's your little buddy. And
he's a nice guy.
And enjoy this while you can, because he's, at any given day now.
Yeah.
He is going to, he's just going to start rolling his eyes,
right.
And you're going to be the idiot that brings the money home.
And then he and Vaughn Zygmunt start getting together, and next thing you know, I'm sleeping in the garage.
Right.
Taped up and belts around my neck.
right. And they'll let you out when they want to.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm ready, though.
All right. So what are, now when you and I went to school.
Yeah.
Because you're a couple years younger than
me.
But when you and I went to school, the back-to-school list that they gave you, well, let's be honest.
They didn't give you one.
There was no list.
No, you just show up. You got a pencil and some paper.
It was a number two pencil and a rock.
Right.
That's all you needed to start school.
Now they got dictates. You got to have this color folder for this.
Yeah.
This kind of a pen pouch.
Right.
Screw you. I don't need all this crap. And they literally, it's like $10,000 is my guess. Now, my wife might be padding that with some vacations for her.
And stuff
that I'm not aware of.
And the guy giving her tennis lessons, who I've warned you about.
That guy is becoming more and more expensive to me.
Yeah.
And she sucks at tennis. I don't even know she has a racket.
That's expensive.
The money I'm spending on that thing is insane.
It's expensive tennis lessons.
My Lord, really.
So you really don't need a lot of the things on the back-to-school list. You just need to get dressed, get up, go to school, and do your work.
Right. And, my wife feels as though if she doesn't do everything on the list, that somehow or other that's going to hold my kids back, or that they're going to be viewed as troublemakers, and so that she falls into this whole thing.
I'm
like, no, we're not doing it.
Right.
Here, they can have a pencil out of my drawer, and here's some paper out of my printer.
And some duct tape.
And that's all they need.
You need duct tape, a pencil, and paper. That's it.
That's it.
That's
period.
It. And this whole thing with rappelling rope and C4, I don't know what that's about.
I don't understand that either. And then, these lunch bag. What happened to a freaking brown paper bag?
Yeah. We didn't even have those. We just carried a sandwich in our pocket.
In your pocket. That's no baggies either. You just put that thing in there in a napkin and stick it in your front right pocket. Kept it warm also. That's the nice part of it. You go at lunchtime. That thing's like warmer than room temperature.
Obviously, you're one of the rich kids. You had a napkin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did come. We came from a lot of money. A
lot of money. All right. Well, listen, I just wanted to give you a chance to vent.
All right, you have to go
and do your thing. And what I don't really know what you do over there at Channel 9, but I know it's really good.
Yeah. I'm mowing the lawn and doing some soil sampling out here, so
all right,
that's all I got going on.
Stay at work
today.
As long as you can.
All right, all my love. Hey, thanks for calling.
Okay,
all right, drive carefully.
I love you. Bye-bye. Okay, bye. That's Paul Conrad, who spends between $7,000 and $12,000 a year on school supplies.
Remember the old Trapper Keepers?
No, we didn't have those.
Oh, see, we had Trapper Keepers, but now we made fun of them in the '90s.
Those were so dumb,
but they were so great because you had. It was a notebook and a folder for each class.
I did not like them.
You kept it all.
We didn't have Trapper Keepers.
No,
we weren't allowed. We had to separate them all.
What do you mean you weren't allowed?
We couldn't use a Trapper. We had to separate. I don't know. That was the deal.
It's like a big folder.
Kids couldn't use them.
They weren't even invented when we were kids.
Yeah.
My kids
started in the 80s.
My kids had them.
Yeah,
so they
your
allowed.
Kids. Yeah, our kids. Yeah.
I used
them. And Andrea.
And me, yeah. I think they were great.
No, even though Mary looks dramatically younger, she's almost my age. Almost.
Yes. Exactly.
But when
almost,
we grew up in quite. the '70s, Mary, you just brought your notebook. You had to have a number two. You found out on the first day of school you need two number two pencils.
Yeah. And a ruler. Always. We never used
ruler,
it, but we needed
and
it.
A
we
had compass.
A protractor.
And a
compass.
I never used the compass. Didn't
and the
know
compass.
How.
No, the compass was so you could poke people next
right,
to you.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, you never used it, but
you
had this
metal spike on it.
It was so dangerous.
Yeah.
Rulers.
Protractor.
Yeah. And then when it was cool.
And you didn't have pens. Nobody had a pen.
Well, or a calculator.
No, we had pens, but
calculators weren't invented.
Right.
We had to have
an carried our abacus to work to school.
Yeah, right.
You did, Dave.
We had to use erasable pens. Remember when the Bic came out with the erasable pen? You couldn't use a ballpoint pen, but you can use an erasable pen.
Those didn't work either.
Listen, in the 80s, when you were growing up,
that
was like the future. That was the Jetsons.
Love the
when 80s. We were growing up in the 70s, we didn't even have roofs on the school. We just met in a tent.
No, you didn't.
On top of a hill. And days when it rained, all your writing would get smudged.
Is that
By the way, you had to know how to make your letters. You had paper. Remember this, Dave?
Cursive.
You had to actually make the letters. You were graded on your ability to actually do the cursive letters.
Mm-hmm.
So your handwriting mattered. You know why we didn't have calculators? Because we had to do it in our head. We had to use our brain, or we had to use actual math principles.
Or our fingers.
Yes, some people toast.
You didn't have calculators?
No. No, 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 no.
No, weren't allowed.
No, weren't allowed.
If they were even
And the
allowed.
First calculators that came out that you can now get for about 99 cents in most places, those were $1,000.
The Texas
And they
instrument?
Were the size of your car.
They were. And they had a roll of paper in them.
Yes, they did. That's true.
Right?
That's true.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like adding machines.
Yeah, they really
That's
were.
What they were.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing is, Jim, this is the amazing thing because I grew up in New York. This is one of the amazing things that I found out when I got here. Dave, I know you're from D.C. I don't think you had this either. But we had to buy our gym clothes.
Oh, we had to, too.
Oh, yeah.
It was like $3.
Gym
you know,
suit.
And you get, like, remember the super short shorts of the 70s?
Right.
And super short shorts and a terrible T-shirt.
Yeah.
Right? You had to wash them all the time. Like, the third time you washed them, they'd fit a baby.
Yeah.
Right? So gross.
They were right. polyester.
Right. So then you had, like, a belly shirt before they were cool. But that's probably saved. I mean, you know, in swimsuits, you had to bring out a swimsuit. But here, you guys, here, the group here, swam naked. Men swam naked.
Wait,
up
what?
Until when? I don't even know, Mary. Up until probably.
Don't look at me. We didn't have a pool.
But you know this happened. Up
yeah,
until
I've heard these stories.
Mid-80s, yeah. I think.
It was just Chicago, though, wasn't it? Chicago
schools? All right, I never. Well, obviously, I mean, I'm a generation later, but we had swimming, but we had bathing suits. I didn't know the boys swam naked.
Oh, yeah, the boys swam naked.
I think this was in the 50s, wasn't
no,
it?
No, no, this 40s? Went on. No, no, this no. went on to the 80s, I think.
Oh, really?
Somebody correct me, because you guys enjoy that. 312-981-7200 is the number. And text or call. All right, back to school. Good luck to you. Wipe that grin off your face,
Stressful
parents.
Stressful time. Stressful time.
At 6:20, I kind of miss it.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, I still have one left, but it's college, and he doesn't seem to. I go, do you need any school supplies? I don't know. You know, whatever. When he gets there, he'll figure it out.
No, the back to school supply list for college is a check. I need a check
exactly.
for tuition.
And books. IPad.
So, oh, and by the way, we got Abigail Grace Wee.
She's like going I to school already?
Yeah, she's in college. Abigail Grace, Amy had an idea to have Abigail Grace come over and swim in her pool at her apartment.
Cool.
So Ross and Lauren and Amy took Abigail Grace in the pool for the first time.
How'd she like it?
Oh.
She's faster than Michael Phelps.
Really?
It's 6. That's why she's better than all the other grandchildren. It's 6:21. She passed Katie Ledecky and said, "Eat my wake." I didn't even know she could talk. 6:26. Imagine, if you will, close your eyes for a second. Well, not if you're driving. Scandal-free government. Fixing things one agency at a time. You're going, wait, we're talking about Illinois, aren't we? It's possible. Cook County Commissioner, 10th District, Bridget Gaynor, friend of the program. I think that's okay that I call you a friend of the program, isn't it, Bridget, until we find out.
I hope so.
Bridget, if we find out that you're some double agent and you're spying for someone, we'll let people know. But so far, you seem totally great.
Okay. I don't know if I'm that interesting, but thank you.
Well, we'll find out. At okay. Bridget Gaynor, G-A-I-N-E-R. Sometimes I worry about some of the stuff we talk about maybe a little wonky, for lack of a better word. But this is important stuff. This is like the independent maps thing. This is stuff that you have to wrap your head around because it affects you every day. So tell people what the land bank is.
So the land bank, you know, look, in about 2009 and 2010, people started calling my office like they did for a lot of people. I'm going through foreclosure. I'm getting letters from banks. You know, I don't know what to do. And so we kind of quickly put together a legal aid clinic at the court. But what it got to was, you know, we're never going to get this market going. If all we're doing is, you know, you want to punish the banks. Okay, they did a bad job, but it doesn't matter. The land bank was created. It's just an entity that buys up vacant housing. It matches up with small developers that would be too small to work with the banks or Fannie Mae. And they're mostly local developers. So most of the guys we work with are African-American developers on the south and west side. And we put families back in homes. And if the home is too far gone, we demolish it because nobody wants to live next to a vacant house. And so we've been able to, we have hundreds of houses in the pipeline. We have a lot of, you know, young developers that we've been working with to start their business. And now we're kind of unwinding this foreclosure crisis one house at a time. So the main thing is you're making houses that used to be vacant filled with a family again.
And why did I reference the scandal-free piece of this? Because there's no tax dollars involved. There's no tax dollars
there's no
involved.
Tax dollars involved.
So there doesn't have to be political shenanigans involved.
No. And you know what? We've tried to make this as independent and close to the market as possible. So we make money based on our transactions. And this year we're going to turn, you know, a sizable return of several million dollars because we just stay focused on what the market needs. We buy the housing. You know, a lot of the neighborhoods that you see a lot of vacant homes in, Chatham, Auburn, Gresham, Belmont, Cragen, they're really desirable. People want to live there. It's just that if I have to spend a year and a half trying to go to court to get it, I'm just not going to bother. So that's our job, is to reduce some of the barriers to make government work for people. And we know that if we don't do the things people want us to do, we're not going to be able to survive. So it's as independent as you can get within a government context. But, you know, I've been really pleased. It's like a lot of things. You know, you have to take a long time to build it and get everyone on board. But it's worked out well. And now we have homes all over the, you know, mostly south and west side, some south suburbs, that are occupied that had sat vacant for years.
Yeah, and if you get these blighted properties off the blighted list, you're also going to help with crime in those neighborhoods.
But crime is a huge issue, because it isn't just that the house gets stripped. It's just it becomes a magnet for people who are squatting or right. want to stay there. And that's the worst. And plus, the minute your house goes, a house on your block goes vacant, your property values drop by about 7%, and it only gets worse. And so for us, it's a twofer. You get a family back in a house. They're starting to pay property taxes again, and there's less crime. And so to some degree, that's the best thing you can do. You know, it's sometimes, you know, the simplest thing, but it's the best thing.
Bridget, do you still have the program? I know for a while the county or the city had been kind of scooping up these lots for a dollar. You know, it was just mm-hmm. a very affordable program where people mm-hmm. can actually try and get some of this land. Is that still in effect?
Yes, that is still in effect. And usually it's for something that's next to your house. But they've expanded it, and if you see a vacant lot in and around your neighborhood and you want to take care of it, you can get it for a dollar if it's been long-term vacant.
How about the other commissioners? Are they on board with the land bank? Nobody's pushing.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody's
yeah.
pushing back.
Not at all. No, we had total unanimous support, and it really has involved everybody. And so, you know, we spent a long time building it, but I spent about the first 10 years of my career as a community organizer, and so that helped. Yeah, everyone got on board.
Bridget's doing something tonight I want people to be aware of. I don't know if you want to plug this or not, but anyway, I will. Young Feminist Conference 2016, hundreds of female CPS students involved. Where, when, and what are you doing?
It's actually this morning. So at 8:30 this morning, we have about 250 girls in high school from all over the city that are coming to this conference, and which I'm excited they want to spend one of their last days of summer vacation talking about this stuff. But, you know, in October, someone who's a friend of mine invited me to speak to her daughter's group. They have a young women's group at Whitney. And, of course, I walk in thinking 80 young girls, all politically active. Who's excited about Hillary? Answer, no one. You know, everyone right. is for Bernie. And this is kind of before Feel the Burn hit it out there. And
sure.
so we started talking about, you know, I kind of thought they'd be excited for a woman running for president. They thought, well, that's not really relevant to me. And so we had this whole conversation about feminism and what does it mean? I mean, it means different things at 17 than it does at 40. And so we did that. And then I went to Lindblom on the South Side, and these girls had a really interesting perspective, which is we were talking about Laquan McDonald and everything that was going on. And they said, you know, my parents don't let me go to the protests. So it's only the boys that get asked things by the reporters, and they're the only ones whose opinion is heard. And we're doing all this stuff in the neighborhood, and no one cares about what I care about. So we started meeting with them all together over the last year, and now we have all of these young girls who want to get together and talk about what they're doing. So there's a whole panel on all the cool things they're doing in the neighborhood, and a girl who started the T-shirt Straight from the Go, someone who started Rage in Inglewood with her mom, someone who's a volunteer on the National Runaway Hotline. So I am kind of shocked at how many girls are interested in coming.
Oh, good. Does that make you feel, though, the fact that the next generation of women is going to be this active? It is this active.
Well, look, as a mother who's raising a couple of her own daughters, you know, you look at these girls and you think, I mean, you know, Andrea, you can see this too. You look at the things you've gone through in your life, and, you know, some of the stuff has been great. Some of it has been not so great. And watching these girls kind of step up and have their own voice and not just be focused on, you know, putting their head down is really important. And I, you know, like I said, the mother in me is very proud, and the Chicagoan in me feels very happy that a generation is coming behind us that feels as committed to our city as they do.
Yeah,
it's great.
We got TV coverage of this? I mean, Channel 9 out of it.
I hope so.
Yeah, absolutely.
8:30 KPMG.
Andrea's gonna let the newsroom know.
I'll make a call.
Yes, come. They're great. They restore your faith in humanity, I'll tell you
that's
that.
True.
On Twitter, at Bridget Gaynor, G-A-I-N-E-R. Thanks for the help.
Thanks, guys.
See you later. Okay. Dr. Kevin Most coming up. I had a leg cramp Saturday. It's like the worst leg cramp I've ever had, and I think I actually may have had my leg fall off. That's how bad the cramp was.
Were you dehydrated?
Well, I played golf,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I had to.
Yeah.
Yes, and it was crazy hot and humid and did a lot of walking and drank, I believe, 14 gallons of water.
That's a lot of water.
I still haven't peed. But yeah, the leg cramp like crazy. And I don't get cramps. Leg cramps. So anyway, we'll talk to Dr. Most about things that actually matter, and I'll work that question in.
Of course, yeah.
Potato chips. It's worked for Jason Hamill.
Yeah.
Right? Or bananas.
Bananas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bananas, yeah. Yeah. Coconut water.
Did you have it at night?
No. Middle of the afternoon.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. That's what I thought, too. I walked it off.
Literally. Glad your leg is back on.
Yeah, let's snap on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Dr. Kevin Most joins us. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
You know, I got a leg cramp. Saturday, listen, I know we want to talk about the Olympics here,
yeah.
But if we're talking about superior athletes, so let's start with me.
Correct.
So on Saturday, after playing golf and walking in a lot of heat,
I love how you quietly said, I'm gonna somehow get this in.
Yeah, I'll work this in right away. So after absorbing a lot of heat, but drinking all the water and all the Gatorade and alternating, just like my friend Kevin Most has told me, I was sitting and doing some work on an iPad, and I stood up, and my leg stayed in the chair. I had a cramp like I've never had in my life.
Yeah.
Ever.
Those hurt, don't they?
Yeah, like nasty. And I walked it off. It took about, I don't know, quarter mile to walk it off, but I walked it off. And but I still have, like, if I even slightly hyperextend my knee, it feels like the worst muscle pull I've ever had. So can you pull a muscle from a cramp?
Well, you get the muscle inflamed, and it's going to have a tendency to go into spasm. So that's probably what's happening. Every time you kind of get in that position, it's going to say, hey, you know what? I don't like this position, so I'm going to cramp or spasm on you.
But what's the post-cramp effect that I'm feeling?
Just inflammation.
All right. So
totally inflammation. Yep. So you're just going to want to stretch that out and don't allow it to get in that position where it's going to cramp.
Should you walk it off, though? I mean,
absolutely. Okay. Walking it off and stretching it out is probably the best thing you can do.
I also rubbed it a lot, and I was in public, so people thought that was a little awkward.
Yeah, that can be, depending on,
But I'm telling you know how people react when you get cramps and you wake up in the middle of the night? And suddenly you turn into a mental patient in your own bedroom. Oh, my God! You know, and you stand up and run around. This was the middle of the day. Middle of the day. So I haven't actually done permanent damage to my leg with this cramp.
No, not at all.
So I can still kick again.
You can kick. You can do. When are the judo finals? I mean, you'll still get in all that. Don't worry.
But, man, that was nasty. Nasty.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you think you're doing the right thing. You're pounding the water. You're pounding the Gatorade. But, you know, sometimes you need more.
Well, yeah. And, you know, that's just keeping your hydration status up. We always talk about the importance of stretching, too. And none of us stretch. You know, a couple times you'll, you know, bend down and touch your knees and say, okay, I'm ready to hit the first golf ball. But really, the stretching is just as important as the fluids.
Doc, I got to be honest with you. If you're only bending and touching your knees, you're not stretching far enough. Let's see you get to your toes.
I was waiting to hear what you had to say about that. Yep.
All right. I want to talk to you about the Olympics because we've had a number of questions about these games and the relative health of the people in these games who are competing, including the women that are going in the water today for what event, Dave Ennett?
The 10K, the Women's Open Water 10K.
Open Water 10K. Oof. On 720 WGN, Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine Impact Every Day. Things good out at the Central DuPage Hospital Complex?
Oh, yeah. Everything's going great out here.
How about at the Northwestern Medicine Complex in the city of Chicago?
Absolutely. Streeterville is always busy. So, yes, both all the hospitals actually are doing really well with Northwestern.
How about all the affiliated doctors and specialty clinics and places that people go?
Yeah, the 3,000 plus doctors, the 25,000 plus employees, everyone's doing pretty good right now.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's a good thing. All right, Doc, so let's talk about these Olympics. First off, with this cupping thing, should we all be cupping, Doc? Should we cup this morning?
No, you know, it is kind of interesting. Athletes are always looking for that secret magic bullet, and when they find something that they think is working, they do it. And people probably saw Michael Phelps and other swimmers, mainly the swimming guys, are using this thing called cupping, which is goes back 1500 BC is the first time that they found it to be used. And what it is essentially is it a suction to the skin, and that's what makes that little bruise. And the thought is that it pulls the skin off of the muscle and allows for increased blood flow to that area, which allows for healing to occur quicker.
Real medicine or not?
You know, there's not a lot of ways to test to say how good is it, because it's difficult to compare it to something else. So the placebo effect definitely has some impact there. The concept is fairly good. If you can increase the blood flow to that area, you get the right chemicals into that area, and it's going to spread up the healing process. Some people say, well, wait a second. You always talk about taking anti-inflammatories where you're trying to decrease the swelling. So tell me how that works. And that is the dilemma there is, do we want decreased swelling with less inflammation, or do we want increased blood flow, which may cause more inflammation?
What do we know then? Like it's on a person-by-person basis?
Exactly. People that are going to use it, they're going to swear by it. They think it's great. We know that really, unless you're on a blood thinner, it's not going to do any harm to you. These bruises are very superficial. It's not doing any major damage to your skin. So the person that has good success with it, run with it. Keep on doing it. But others that say, I didn't really notice a change, that's not surprising to many of us.
Doc, I want to ask you, too, speaking of the Olympics, about this crazy taping. You know, I see the volleyball players, you know.
KT with, tape.
With it on their shoulders and track, with it on their knees. Why are we seeing so much of that?
Pretty cool tape, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kinesiology tape, and it's really fairly new over probably the last 15, 20 years. And again, taping is very interesting. If you watch a football game and an athlete turns his ankle and they bring him to the sideline, or a basketball game, and they tape it as tightly as they possibly can because they're trying to decrease the swelling and decrease the inflammation there. They don't want that joint to swell up. The kinesiology tape is just the opposite. It's doing essentially the same thing as cupping. It's trying to pull that skin off of the muscle area to allow increased blood flow. Now, that being said, they're also making claims that it can help in the biomechanics of the joint, which is very difficult for many of us to swallow just because of the strength of the joint. So it looks very colorful. I think it's cool that they make it in many different colors. But the impact of what it does, again, it's one of those that's not going to harm you, but there's not a lot of science behind it that is saying this is going to work.
I've got a little tennis elbow. I've done it on my elbows, and you know, in my head, I think it works. But in my head, if it works, it works, right? I mean, it's whatever achieves the goal you're trying to achieve. If it's just a pain reduction thing to complete whatever activity is going on, you know if you're too hurt, and no amount of K-tape is going to change that, right?
Yeah, and like I said, it's not going to do any harm for you. And like you said, the tennis elbow ones, you see the people that wear the brace, all they're trying to do is change that point of impact at the elbow, just move it a hair down, move it a little bit down where it's not inflamed so that they're a little bit more comfortable. So there's, you know, they're saying, hey, this tape will prevent injuries and it speeds up healing. It possibly can do some of those things, but there's not, you know, I wish there was a lot more science behind it, but there's not.
Before we run out of time, the open water swimming today, the water in general turning green, your thoughts on all of that?
Yeah, you know, the green, the blue-green, I think that was fairly cool when they showed it, and everyone's freaking out saying, what is it? When they really actually went down, they just found out it was the pH of the water, so they changed the pH, but there was no bacteria, there was nothing else in that water, so the divers are fine. Now, the individual swimming in the bay, that could be a little bit more concerning. You know, the heat down there, as well as the history of what's gone on in that bay. You know, last year we had a German sailor out there and got a bad skin infection, and he assumes it was from the water. So you saw a lot of the team saying, hey, you know what, we're going to prevent some of this. We're going to have water repellent uniforms for anybody who's going to be in the water. So it'll be interesting to see if any of the swimmers have any problems. The big thing is if they would have an abrasion or a cut, an open wound, and now be in that water. As long as their skin is intact and they don't have any breaks in their skin, then they should do fine. They should be able to get out and rinse off and shouldn't have a problem.
And don't swallow it.
Don't swallow it. Yeah. Nope.
Doc, great stuff as always. And again, Northwestern Medicine, impact every day. I'll be in touch on all my whiny little personal problems separately. But I appreciate your help.
You got it. Talk to you soon.
All right, bud. It's Dr. Kevin Most. I would say most valuable resource on the program.
Absolutely. Yeah, how's your leg, so. By the way?
I can barely walk.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm lucky to be alive. But you know me. I don't like to make this show about me. You know that.
No.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
My husband and I have released 33 years of tax returns. So you got to ask yourself, why does he want to release them? Yeah, well, we're going to find out.
Frankly, I think we have good reason to believe that there's a bombshell in Donald Trump's taxes. Every time he's asked about his taxes, he dodges and delays and says, well, we're working on it.
As far as my return, I want to file it. Except for many years, I've been audited every year. 12 years or something like that. Every year, they audit me. So I can't do it until the audit is finished.
Well, we're waiting.
714. Louis Sands is here. He's been nice enough to talk taxes with us on more than one occasion. Welcome back to the program. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
You want to plug your company?
Sure, yes. I work for Sikich LLP. We're a professional services firm out in Naperville specializing in accounting, technology, investment banking, and advisory services.
Companies and individuals?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, so let's start with the Trump story here. Trump says, I can't release because of an audit. Everybody gets audited at one point or another at a certain level of income, and the richer you are, the more likely you are to be audited, true or not?
Mostly true. Not there's just not enough resources for everyone to be audited.
I mean, most of the rich folks.
The more money you have, the more high profile you are, seems like the more likely you are to get audited. Yeah.
Is there a reason then he could not release his tax returns if he chose to do it?
No.
Right.
No. I mean, just because of the last thing you said, if he chose to do it. Now, I don't know. Obviously, I'm not privy to any of the information about what he's being audited on or what his people are telling him. But there's no law stopping you from voluntarily, you know.
And this is not some political stake in the game for you. You're speaking from a tax perspective.
Absolutely right. I mean, that's the sort of thing where you don't even, I mean, technically, there's no law that says you have to release your tax returns to run for president, but it's just an accepted norm that people do. All I know is that if someone's being audited, it can be anything from just a mail saying, you know, your W-2 fell off your tax return, please confirm this amount, to a full-blown,
right.
So, and anywhere in between. So it's not as if it shuts everything down. It's a slow process. It takes time, and I can totally see maybe people just not wanting the return out there to be scrutinized with, you know, a fine-tooth comb. But the fact is, if he were adamant about wanting to do it, there's no reason he couldn't.
Should it take over a year? Because if we go on Trump's clock, even as overburdened the IRS and understaffed as the IRS is and claims to be, should it take this long for an individual audit?
It can, depending on the scope. You know, the situation is, which year are we talking about? I mean, obviously there's a 3-year statute of limitations that they can go back and look at it, and you know, depending on what year it is, I mean, you would suggest that if this was the 2015 return probably isn't filed yet. Typically, it's not due until October 15th. So typically people that have a lot of wealth and a lot of different K-1s or whatnot entering, it takes time to get them in. So I would imagine that it's not even his 2015 return that's under audit. It could be, but if it was his 14 return, I mean, they have until 2018 to get that thing done. It can take that long. It shouldn't take a year. You know, I mean, but you just, that's speaking in very general terms.
With him being so adamant, though, about not releasing them, what would you expect to see in there? What is he hiding?
I wouldn't want to try to guess what he's hiding. What I will say is that, you know, Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine released their tax returns, I believe it was last week.
Mike Pence said he's about to.
And that makes sense too, because it's just to try to maybe take some of the spotlight, I would imagine, off. But what you saw in Hillary Clinton's tax return, for example, she pays a very high tax rate. It was upwards of north of 34%, and on significant income, I think it was north of $10 million,
right,
when it was all said and done.
Right.
And the interesting thing is that's very. It sounds crazy, but if she were one of my clients, that I would feel almost apologetic for something like that, because that's an awfully, almost by doing nothing, it's hard to pay much more in tax.
Well, I think it's an important point to make too about the tax code for people that are upset and continue to harp on this. The rich need to pay their fair share. Successful people using good tax accountants and attorneys to maximize their legal ability to minimize their tax hit is the same thing as you going to H&R Block to make sure that you're paying the right number for your particular income.
The tax code is tilted against you if you do nothing. I mean, everything in the world is taxable. Olympic medals are taxable unless there's something that specifically says it's not. And nothing is deductible unless it specifically says it is. So if you're using the laws and the rules as they're set without, you know, breaking any of the laws to your best advantage, that's just prudence. That's not breaking any laws.
Right. So there's not a screaming about the rich need to pay their fair share. No, fix the tax code.
Well,
if there's a unified belief that the tax code is the problem and there's an inequity in income levels and taxes paid, then fix the tax code. Don't expect everyone who has been successful to go, wait, let me give the government a little more.
Right. Right. Well, and then, you know, and the flip side of that is, you know, there's the Warren Buffetts of the world who are saying, you know, I'm going to, you know, anybody over that makes over $1 million should pay at least, you know, this percentage because it's only fair. It's the same system that allowed them to make their money. I mean, there's arguments on both sides. The fact is, until they change the rules, operating within the rules is perfectly. Tim Kaine's tax rate was closer to 20%. And that's, you know, he almost half of what the Clintons paid.
The tax code is like airline seat pricing. It's like a guy next to you could be paying $400. You're paying $200. You know, it depends on your accountant. It depends on your level of expertise. It depends on a million things that go on because the tax code is so complex.
Without a doubt. And it also, it's almost the more money you have, the more options you have. You know, right. your salary, your wages, the thing that 99% of us is the biggest number on our tax return, that's taxed at the highest income tax rate for, you know, qualified dividends, long-term capital gains, these sorts of things, you know, tax-deferred income, municipal bonds. The things that more wealthy people have are taxed at lower rates. So the more money that you have in those sorts of vehicles, the less tax you're going
to
pay.
When you see coverage of campaign 2016, is, you know, you're listening to us, or you're driving around, or you're watching TV or whatever, what makes you scream as a tax professional? Because you go, people just don't get it.
Just what we're talking about. I mean, it started with Mitt Romney. Everyone says that you know, oh, he's paying less of a tax rate than his secretary, for example. That's
right.
That's the easiest thing.
That's the hook.
Right. And it's just everything that we've been talking about. That's, you know, you'd hope so, because, you know, the flip side is as a professional, you're, you know, you're always looking to, you know, bring in new clients and things like that. If Mitt Romney was paying 35% tax, I'd want to see if I knew someone that knew him that could introduce me to him, because we could make that number go a lot lower.
Right.
The only reason that you would want it that high is if you wanted to perhaps, you know, I'm just speculating, but if you wanted to avoid any sort of trouble with that. So I think, you know, just my two cents, someone with a higher tax rate is a lot more willing to release it, you know, a lot of high charitable contributions. If it paints you in a good picture, why not release it?
And if you take this back to the Trump piece of this, look, this is just the powers of common sense and deduction, not in a tax way, right, but deduction as in looking at this. And that is, if I'm Donald Trump, the fastest way for me to put this tax argument to bed is to release my tax returns. And since I'm not releasing my tax returns, there must be something in them that could be troubling to me when it comes out in the media, whether it's my net worth, whether it's the fact that I'm not as charitable as I claim I am, whatever the case may be. Otherwise, end the argument.
I mean, it could be. I mean, I just really don't want to speculate.
No, it's me, not you. Yeah, I'm not speaking for you.
Right.
When you're on the show, I treat you like a reporter or a doctor. I try not to put words in your mouth. And as far as what we know about Hillary's tax returns, other than paying a pretty high rate, there doesn't seem to be anything funky in there, other than the fact that the majority of their charitable contributions were to the Clinton Global Initiative.
Right.
So there are folks that are anti-Clinton and certainly make the argument they're paying themselves.
Yeah, and you know, but there's nothing wrong with setting up a foundation. You know, it's a very common
thing.
Legal foundation,
right?
It's you know, it has to file returns. It's under scrutiny from the IRS. It can be audited too. Donations to that sort of a foundation that can make grants and things to legitimate public is a perfectly legitimate charitable contribution.
Sure.
And so, yeah, no, you know, I haven't really combed through her tax return, but, you know, the things that stand out is the large charitable contribution, the large speaking. It's primarily made up of, you know, huge speaking fees,
yeah,
that they received, and
right,
then book revenue that Hillary Clinton received from Simon & Schuster, I believe.
Right, and you two can make that kind of money if you want to go out and run for president. And at this point, I'll endorse you, and I don't even know who you are. So great to talk to you. If people want to get a hold of your company, what do they do? You specifically?
Oh, yeah. No, you can look me up. We're, you know, www.sikich.com.
Spell it again.
S-I-K-I-C-H.
Okay. And you got a Twitter thing or anything you want to throw?
Ooh, good.
Your MySpace page? Your Friendster page?
Friendster. No, I'm too old for that.
So. All right, so Sikich.com.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for the expertise. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to bother you again. I hope you're prepared for that.
I'll be back.
All right, thanks. 727, top of the show today. And you shouldn't ever miss this show. You should go to the podcast in case you do. For instance, on who were the actors we had on Friday? We had Kevin Smith and Jerry O'Connell. You should get the Jerry O'Connell podcast in particular. Kevin Smith wants to host this show. He wants to take my job. But we like Kevin. But Jerry O'Connell couldn't have been better.
So great.
But that's what I'm saying. Don't miss a minute of this show because you might miss discussions like Chicago schools used to make boys swim naked, you know, when in swim class, in gym class.
And up until pretty recently.
80s.
Yeah.
To the 80s. Orion Samuelson is a nice boy from Wisconsin. And Orion, did you have swimsuits? Were they invented yet when you were in school? Orion?
No, we didn't have swimming pools. And we had a creek in the valley, and we would go in the creek. And, yeah, we'd go in without swimming suits, but not in the wintertime, of course, because it got as cold as 51 below zero one morning on the farm. So didn't do it in the wintertime.
So there was no swimming pool at the school?
Oh, no. Oh, golly, no. So none crick, of that.
Is you head for the crick. All right. Now, what about trapper keepers and book bags?
I have no idea what a trapper keeper is. Never seen
it's
one.
How you catch a raccoon.
A book bag was a big brown paper bag that we'd throw our books in. We would get a new fresh piece of coal to write with, and then we would get some wrapping paper that my mother would save off packages and
that
stuff.
You could write on for your lessons.
That we could write on.
Yeah.
We had no discussion on which bathroom we used. We had two outhouses. One was labeled men, one was labeled women. Uh-huh. Never a question on which one to use.
Now, when it was super cold in school and you had to go out and use the outhouse, would you wait till spring?
No, I never tried that. I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Golly. Yeah.
But whose job was it to shovel the path to the outhouse?
Whoever got there first in the morning, and sometimes, the teacher would get there a little bit late. But we had 8 grades. We had one teacher. And so as a result, I got to skip 6th grade because I'd heard that for 6 years. And so when we got to 6th grade, the teacher said, I think I'll just promote you to 7th grade.
As far as back-to-school lists go, you probably didn't sit down on the farm and go, here's what we're going to need before we send little Orion back to school?
No, we didn't. No. We knew what to bring. We knew we had to have some paper, and we knew we had to have a pencil or two, and that was about it. And we had blackboards. We didn't have computers. We had blackboards on the wall and had a very small library. I think we had encyclopedias, and that was about it. And so,
how many books in the library outside of the encyclopedias? A couple dozen?
Yeah, probably a couple dozen.
Yeah. But isn't that all the books were written then?
No, there were more than I'm not that old. No, there were more books written then, but it was far different. And of course, the biggest thing I got going back to school when my lunch bucket was no longer a paper bag, I got my Gene Autry lunch bucket, and it had a thermos jug inside.
Oh, that's crazy.
Oh, that was
technology.
That was a big technology drum.
That's a big deal.
It really,
it's a
was,
very big deal.
So I've enjoyed your discussion, you kids, and your discussion this morning.
So when Dave and I talk about the 70s being archaic, you look at that as like the future.
Oh, yes. Oh, and it was.
Yeah.
Because I was going to grade school in the 40s.
Yeah.
And no electricity, of course. And we had a huge furnace that stood in the back of the room. And we'd have to haul wood in to get that fired up. And whoever got there first again would start the fire. And hopefully by the time classes started, it would be warm enough that you could take your jackets off.
So kids would be fighting to sit in the back of the class?
Yeah. That way they would get close to the furnace.
And what time did Ma and Pa Ingalls pick you up after school?
Well, at 4 o'clock, I started walking the mile back home because we walked every day, and it was a mile from our farmhouse to the schoolhouse. So the only time that I got a ride was when we would have a blizzard and the roads would be snowed shut and too deep to walk. Then Dad would hook up the team of horses to the big sled, and he'd take us by sled to the schools.
That's so you would just text and say, I need a ride?
Yeah. I wrote it in snow in yellow ink.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
When my baby smiles at me, I go to Rio de Janeiro.
She's embedded in Rio. She might be in bed at Stacy St. Clair, StacyClair. And good morning, Stace. How are you?
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're doing fine. I just noticed a moment ago that some unnamed athletes in Rio have won the 100-meter burglary and armed robbery. Ryan Lochte and three other swimmers got mugged.
Yeah, that's what they're saying, that they were out celebrating after the swimming event ended on Saturday night, and after they went to a party at Fran's house, which every country has their own sort of hospitality house here where you can go and party and have a good time, and they were at Fran's house for whatever reason after the swimming event ended, and on their way to another party, they were stopped by people they said were disguised as police officers. And Lochte's story is that they held a gun to them and told him to get on the ground, and then like Lochte refused, and then they ordered him again, and then he finally was like, okay, whatever, I'll get on the ground. He's very sort of lackadaisical in his description of what happened. But
I believe we can give you a dramatic interpretation of this. Let me go to Mike Jacobson on this. Mike, I'm going to ask you to play the role of Ryan Lochte. All right, you have a gun to your head. What are you going to do?
Whoa, bro. Like, what is that? What's in your hand, bro?
Hey,
no, wait a minute.
On the ground! On the ground!
But that's my wallet, man. Like, yeah. Like, it's totally my wallet. Like, that's not your property. It's mine.
Again, that's Mike Jacobson playing Ryan Lochte, and I think exceptionally well.
And that is exactly how Ryan Lochte described it yesterday, so...
Very impressive.
What color is his hair?
It's ice blue, isn't it? Is it ice blue or is it more purple?
The color you would, it's more white. It's sort of the color that you would expect your hair to turn if you jumped into the diving well here.
Got it.
It's just this horrible, yeah. It's like, you know the kids in high school who put too much peroxide in their hair? That would be Ryan Lochte.
Good move, Ryan. Good move. You know, I used the analogy the other day, and I do think it holds up. I think he's the Phil Mickelson of swimming. You know, Phil Mickelson of Tiger. If there's never a Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson is in the argument is one of the top five greatest of all time. Ryan Lochte had the misfortune, well, along with the fact that he was born without a brain, the misfortune of swimming in the era of Michael Phelps.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely true. But then again, we'll always remember Ryan Lochte because he was part of that great rivalry. So I think it cuts, you know, a little bit both ways.
Yeah, that's true.
For him.
That's true.
He swears he's coming back in 4 years. He also swears that Michael Phelps will be back in 4 years. So we'll maybe we haven't seen the last of these two.
Michael Phelps can be 35. Is he swimming with a walker at that point? Floaties on?
It really doesn't sound like he's going to be back.
It's old for
years.
Swimming.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, but I went through this whole goodbye with him in London 4 years ago, where now I find out he was this miserable person in London, and he really wasn't ready to go, and blah blah blah. So you know, I'll believe it when I see it.
And we have a swimmer that's like 35 that just won a gold medal. The guy that won the 50. What was
his
name?
Exactly, Irvin.
Yeah, he's 35.
So you think?
Yeah,
there was
a gymnast yesterday from Uzbekistan who was like 41 vaulting around. So
that's crazy.
All right. Well, great. Then Michael Phelps, see you in Tokyo. The accommodations have been better than Sochi. The experience seems like it's been fine. But you tell me, you're there.
Yeah, I think the accommodations are fine. I think these games are a little bit harder for everyone. The transportation's a little bit more difficult. Like, for example, I'm on a bus right now, and we've been circling the Olympic Stadium for about 15 minutes. I'm not really sure we're ever going to make it there. And, you have to be a little bit more mindful of crime than, you know, I did have to be in Sochi or in London. So, yeah, it's a great assignment, and there are some hiccups, but you deal with it, and you keep going. And really, there's been some great, you know, athletic moments, and that's what, you know, the games are really about.
Stace, I've seen a lot of celebrity sightings, but no more than Matthew McConaughey, who seems to be poolside, courtside, trackside.
Yeah. He is the Jim Belushi of the Olympics, isn't he? I mean, he's everywhere. And
Matthew McConaughey and Jim Belushi mentioned in the same sentence. That's fantastic.
You know, his wife is Brazilian, so I think they're just down here soaking it in. But yeah, he's at the venues, and he is clearly loving it.
What is your favorite non-event related thing that's happened since you got there? Something you saw, something you experienced, something you heard about, something maybe we don't know?
Well, I think it's when I randomly ran into that oily Tongan from the opening ceremony.
Wow, really?
That's definitely my number. Yeah.
Did you slide right off of him?
Well, that seems a little personal. But did you?
Yeah, I saw him walking. I was walking to a bus stop, and I walked past this guy, and I was like, how do I know that person? And I thought, like, you know, and I was like, I don't know anybody this good looking. So I turned around, and I'm like, he had Tonga on the back of his shirt, and I was like, I know who this is. So I marched right up to him, whipped out my cell phone, and was like, I have some questions to ask you.
Was he cool?
Extremely. Yeah, he's like, he knows that this is his moment, right? I mean, he's not going to win a medal here, and he just sort of, he's sort of embracing the idea that people are talking about Tonga. He was great.
Oily Tonga guy. Yeah. That's a great story.
I want to see that picture, Stace.
I love that story. do you have to be careful where you step so you don't crush any of the Olympic gymnasts? They're very tiny.
They are incredibly small. Yes, pixie-like people. But they're always surrounded by giant entourages. So, I don't think anyone could step on them even if they wanted to.
You know, Simone Biles
has been incredible.
Yeah, she has air traffic control. That's how high she flies. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's not, planes aren't allowed to land while she's performing. And Usain Bolt wins again. This guy looks like a thin, in shape Shaq O'Neal when he runs. He's a big dude.
Beast.
He's giant. And like the thing is he got off to a terrible start. I mean, but he comes back and he makes it look like really easy. And then he has like a victory lap that takes literally 1,000 times longer than when it took him to run the 100 meters. Like, I sort of love this guy. He's just total embraces like all the craziness about it.
Yeah, and he's just cool as could be as he slides across the finish line. Last night when he was winning the 100, he was signing another endorsement deal as he crossed the finish line and holding up his number one finger.
Exactly. And then his, like, poor guy, though. His mom's in the stands, and, like, the first thing she says after he finishes is, like, thank goodness, now he can finally get married and have a baby.
Wow.
Like, that's all she wants. Like, the guy has,
is she Greek?
You know, 3 gold medals.
It's true. What's my mother doing in Rio?
Exactly.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So, like, the poor guy makes history that his mom's up there complaining that he's not married yet.
Wow. All right. Well, listen, say hi to Oily Tonga guy, unless he's on the bus with you. And
see what I can do.
Stacey St. Clair, at Stacey St. Clair in your Chicago Tribune and ChicagoTribune.com. Great stuff. Thanks, Stace.
Take care, guys. Bye.
Bye, Stace. Bye.
And good luck. She's still lapping the Olympic Stadium.
Yeah. Don't you like how she said she just had a random encounter?
She's been stalking Oily Tonga guy for a week. .755 after 8, Dean Richards. Kurt Byram on the Olympic golf wrapping up yesterday. Dan Hampton after 9 on the Bears. And we got a lot more to come on the program. Oh, and apparently Sandberg got married.
Did it happen?
Apparently so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have we seen pictures?
Well, Pat tried to run, and she caught him at the border, border of Indiana. No, it looked like a, I saw some photos, and it looked like a beautiful evening for everybody, and she surprised him and had some of his family come in.
How nice.
Yeah, it's very nice. So she'll be back tomorrow, and everyone on the show, of course, here, as we've established, is afraid of her. So let me go to Jake on this one as well. Jake, are you encouraged that Sandberg got married? Do you think she'll be nicer to you now?
I think the crazy is going to be coming out of the bottle even more.
Oh, you do?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, well, that's an interesting theory. Now, any particular reason?
No, just a theory. I just think, you know, she's had a few days off here, so she's going to have to get out that anger somehow. There's got to be some sort of anger that she hasn't released this. She had a happy weekend.
That's a good point. She's going to have to come in and take it out on us.
There's going to be some judgmental talk
between 6 and 6:10 tomorrow morning. I guarantee
think that's
it.
Probably
a lot
true.
A lot of angst, like pent up.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. And she's
a probably, ticking time bomb.
She's probably nervous, too, because she's got the Miss Judgmental pageant coming up here soon as well. And she's a 3-time champion. Here's a couple things from the weekend. We mentioned the Olympics, of course. But thanks to everybody at the beautiful White Eagle Golf Course, we had the senior club championship this weekend, which I'm now eligible for.
Why? Because it's 40 and up?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I sucked once again. Yeah, 2 weeks
in.
Just horrible, horrible.
You know,
horrible.
When you say suck, though, that means what? You shoot 80?
No. Good God, man. If I shot 80 now, I'd be tap dancing and singing a happy tune. I'm playing terrible. Just really playing terrible. I got to go see Emil. Emil Esposito, finest teacher there is. Got to go see Emil. You know what he'll do? He'll go, you're hitting it right. Hit it left, dummy. And then I'll fix it. He'll show me a couple of things. But Emil's a great teacher.
He won't call you dummy.
Well, he'll call me that. He wouldn't call his other clients that, but he'd call me that because he can.
Yeah.
And then you were busy all weekend with some golf stuff.
Yeah, we had the girls' golf clinic out at Silver Lake, a huge success. So thanks to Lizzie and Rachel and everybody out at Silver Lake and Lou Malnati's Pizza. Maggie, and of course, Mindy Kaplan, who sent over some delicious pizzas. So huge thanks to Silver Lake. Great, great girls golf event that we had on Saturday.
And Friday night at the Bell Sal Banquets in Aurora, we had stand-up comedy there. It was Mike Toomey, John DeCoste, and me. A really nice crowd and lots of laughs. Met a lot of really great people. People listen to the show, loving the show, and you know, I love doing it. I don't do it that much anymore, but 5 or 6 times a year we put these shows on, and if you get a chance to come out, I hope you will. We have another one coming up. It's at Governor State in a little over a month at the end of September.
Excellent.
So we'll tell you, I can get tickets to that. And, of course, New Year's Eve is going to be in Downers Grove this year.
Oh, it's going to be in Downers? Oh, good. It's a little closer.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Now it's close to my house, and I can't make it.
Why?
Why? What are you doing New Year's Eve?
I'm going to be at a wedding.
Whose wedding?
A friend's wedding. Mary friend's Sanders. Son's wedding.
You're in the wedding?
No, I'm going to the wedding.
Well, you don't have to go.
What do you mean? It's going to be a great time.
Who gets married?
What do you think? The show's going to be a funeral?
Well, yeah. Well, maybe I can go to both, but no, I can't.
Wait, who gets married on New Year's Eve? That's kind of a...
They're getting married on New Year's Eve. Yeah. I think it's kind of cool, actually.
Tell them to move the wedding.
Have you noticed, Steve, that there's a correlation between wedding dates and your comedy show?
That's a good point.
Yes, good point.
That's a good point. It's a very good point.
I don't know. It's a little eerie.
And you know what's interesting, too, is the tremendous loyalty of the staff on their choices of what they're going to do.
What?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah,
Wintrust Community Banks Hour continues. Good morning, Dave.
Hello.
How are you, buddy?
I'm great.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for asking.
Feeling good. Steve, how are you doing?
Yeah, you don't care. Listen, we have a
You look great.
Thanks, appreciate it.
You look really rested today.
We have local news. Local news as reported by you. Robert Jordan has announced his retirement.
How about that?
How many years?
43 years.
And he just got through Tribune probation. Tough system here. What's he going to do?
43 years. He started here in 1973. He says,
is that right?
I'm sorry, 19. Did I say 73?
Yeah, that's 43.
Yeah,
that's
right. 73. He's done everything, reported every kind of story, you know, serious, funny, ridden roller coasters, you name it. He's done everything. But sent out a note to all of his colleagues here saying that I'll miss my wonderful friends whom I had the pleasure to know and work with since I came here in 1973. But now I'll have the opportunity to go with my wife of 46 years to countless weekend events that we've not been able to enjoy for these many decades.
So he's like, assuming she wants him to go.
Well, that's very true. After 46 years, suddenly...
She's probably got a system.
Yeah, suddenly you show up and you're in the way.
What do you mean you're available Saturday?
I'm sorry. I took a part-time job. So he's got a beautiful little granddaughter now with his daughter, Karen, who is on Channel 7, does an amazing job. and his son-in-law, Christian Farr, who's on Channel 5. It's a big TV family there. So he's got a beautiful granddaughter. He's got a video production business that he also runs. So he's going to keep very busy. But this man is a genuine Chicago TV legend, on screen, off screen, class. Not a nicer guy in the world than Bob Jordan.
And what does that mean for his co-anchor?
Jackie?
Yeah, she's Bang. Out.
You think?
She's not.
Who's she going to do the secret handshake with?
They do that. That
is pretty cool.
You have to look on YouTube to see. During the breaks, they do this. I don't know. It's like a clapping.
Incredibly complex.
Choreographed.
Layered.
It's like patty cake on steroids, right?
It's like 65 different moves or something that they do in sync.
It's like when you say, Jinx, buy me a Coke, and then you do the inky, pinky, stinky, winky, flush it down the kitchen sinky. But they have this whole...
it's like what?
What?
Alley-oop, do hickey. The King of France. You guys never did that?
No, not so much. No, not so much.
Okay.
Well, congratulations to Robert Jordan. That's great.
Couldn't be happier for him.
Yeah, we're kidding about Jackie Bang. Jackie can stay as long as she wants. Also from the weekend, Tony Bennett at Ravinia.
He has been playing at Ravinia, I think he said...
Did you go?
47 years. I wasn't able to get there on Saturday night. I've seen him a couple of times.
Andre was there, wasn't he?
I was there. Yeah. Oh, it was a wonderful, wonderful show, Dean. And I saw him last year. Was last year with Gaga?
I think it was the year before with Gaga.
I can't remember. But. I thought, okay, you know what? He'll be all right. Maybe his voice will waver a little bit. Mm-mm. He was phenomenal.
We have some sound. You want to hear a little Tony Bennett?
Yeah.
They all said we'd never get together. They laughed at us and how. Ho, 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 who's got the last laugh now?
This man is 90 years old.
That's ridiculous.
And during this part, he's twirling. He's doing twirls in front of the piano.
To get in. They all laughed at Whitney and his cotton gin.
Hey!
They all laughed at Fulton and his steamboat.
That's crazy.
Chocolate bar.
The fact that he can hit a note, let alone the note.
He's hitting the perfect notes. He's not forgetting lyrics.
Wow. That's impressive.
I still say, I've seen video of like three or four of the songs from over the weekend. Nobody interprets a song like he does, draws you into the lyrics of a song.
I can't remember why I walk into a room and I'm 55.
How about that? That's what I was thinking too. You know, what will we be like when we're 90?
Well, dead for one thing.
Still doing this segment. Steve, it's 8:10.
Dean, hold on. I got to pee.
Are we still on the radio?
I'll be back in an hour.
So at the end of the concert, they wheel a giant birthday cake out for him because August 3rd was his 90th birthday. And Wells Kaufman, who's the CEO of Ravinia, wheels this giant cake out.
Not with 90 candles.
Did it have 90 candles on it, Andrea?
I don't know if it had 90 candles on it.
Because
everybody sang happy birthday.
The Highland Park Fire Department would have been by.
He ended with Chicago and then everybody sang happy birthday.
Yeah, okay. I'm looking at the cake. Actually, there were no candles on it. Probably a smart
move. Right.
Yeah. But, they wheeled the cake out. Everybody in the whole place, and it was completely sold out. And a choir on stage sings happy birthday to him. And he had some really beautiful words after it that we have that also.
I've been performing here 47 years now. And each year it gets better and better. This is the most wonderful venue in all of the United States. I can't tell you how much myself and many, many of the millions of people adore Chicago and love everything about it. Thanks for being so wonderful to me tonight. Thank you very much.
Not nice.
Very sweet.
Not nice. And what an honor for Ravinia.
Really nice.
You have somebody like Tony Bennett saying that this is the greatest venue in the United States.
He did a show in Cleveland 2 nights before and he said, and I'd like to tell all of you to blow it out your butt.
No.
And then he left town.
He was so classy though. And he kept saying he performed for about 45 minutes and said, should we keep it going? And then, of course, everyone said, yeah. And then after a couple more songs, let's keep it going.
That's awesome.
It was great.
Yeah, I'm looking at the video. He looks great. Just, hasn't missed a step. Do you know that he was the first musical guest on the Tonight Show, the first night that Johnny Carson took
over. Is that right?
He sang I Left My Heart in San Francisco. The song had just come out, and sang it on Carson's first show.
Well, the Gaga thing, you know, 2 years ago was great. But he's been doing that forever, right? Did a duets thing a while ago.
Did.
In the 60s, you know, when and this is 50 years ago, he's going, I'd like to bring out a really special gal. And it'd be who? Judy Carn, you know, and then...
Judy Carn.
I don't know. Who sang in the 60s?
Alex, I'd like obscure names for 500, please.
My point is he keeps...
Judy Carn.
He's been breaking acts for 50 years. 60 years. Judy Carn. Was it Judy Carn a comedian?
She was on Laughing.
Yeah. I literally, in the middle of that, could not think of one female singer from the 60s.
Wasn't even a singer.
I just wanted one one-hit wonder from the 60s, I couldn't pull it.
Steve was going for Judy Collins and then had a brain freeze.
And he's 90.
Right.
I can't pull Judy Collins. I'm 55.
Exactly.
It's over.
That's hilarious.
I saw him once with Joey Heatherton. True.
Wow.
How about that?
She was opening for him.
Hey, Judy Carnes, let's bring her out right now.
She actually just passed last September.
He did on his duets album.
But she wouldn't be here. We probably can't bring her out.
I'm pretty sure he did a duet with Amy Winehouse.
Yeah, that's true.
On
that
his,
is true.
A duets album.
I remember that. Can't bring her out either.
And she passed as well.
He talked about how, you know, how tragic it was, you know, how talented she was, how amazing she was when she passed away. So, all right, Judy Carn. That's the phrase that pays today.
Tony Bennett, and I think Don Henley was at Ravinia last night.
He was. And
bring him out.
Is going to also be tonight, actually.
He's doing both nights?
Henley's doing two nights. Yeah.
That's great. I miss both. All right. So a couple other things here. Jennifer Hudson, as always, free school supplies
She
for the
came
kids.
Back, as she always does every year. She and her sister Julia throw this big event called Hatch Day. It's called Hatch Day because that was a phrase that Julia Hudson's little son used to use. So, you know, talking about the day that he was hatched. It was, you know, a cute phrase.
Sure.
Little Julian, Jennifer and Julia's mom, other family members, as you'll recall, several years ago were murdered. So Jennifer and Julia now keep their memory alive by trying to turn their own family's personal tragedy into something positive by opening up the Ray Kroc Center in the Roseland neighborhood every year on Julian's birthday, on his hatch day, and give out free school supplies to kids. And we were out there yesterday also, and Jennifer talked a little bit about why this is so important to her.
This foundation, our goal is to acknowledge the positive and encourage that, especially in the children, you know what I mean? And so we like to, even in, when they're in school, you know, like you don't always have to get all A's, but try. You know what I mean? And for me, I always say, I was a little black girl sitting on the church steps. I came from where you came from. And if I can do it, you can do it too. So for them to be, you know, seen in a positive way and to see positivity and be included and acknowledged, that's going to touch somebody.
Yeah, I think it's
powerful
great.
Stuff. Good for her.
I think it's great. You go through the kind of pain that they went through and you're able to turn out something positive out of that whole thing. Nothing but... kudos to Jennifer and Julia both for doing this every year.
Still to come, Kevin Hart, Adele, and the musical stylings of Phyllis Diller on the way in just a moment as well.
And Judy Garn.
But at 8:22.
Suck it to me.
Steve Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 9720.
8:27, back to Dean. All right, so a couple other things to get to. Kevin Hart got married again.
Isn't this nice? Married his longtime girlfriend. They've been together for quite a long time, engaged for a couple of years.
Was he married before?
He was.
Yeah, okay.
He was married for 8 years before. He's got an 11-year-old daughter and an 8-year-old son who was his best man at this wedding.
Oh, that's cool.
Really cute. His 8-year-old son... Actually,
was his 8-year-old son taller?
2 inches taller than Kevin. Exactly right.
sorry, dude, I stepped on that. I apologize.
No, that's okay. That's okay. A lot of celebrities were there. Ludacris was there, and Dwayne Wade was there. Judy Carn was there.
Judy Carn made it.
Big
that's
surprise.
Great. What a singer.
Big surprise.
What
that,
a singer she is.
She was there. They got married at Oprah's estate in Montecito, California.
Me too. My 5th wedding was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, very nice, beautiful.
Stedman was my best man.
The bride, Aniko.
First time he'd ever been at a wedding.
Parrish was, and the last time he was ever at a wedding, too. She was absolutely beautiful. Really, really nice affair.
Wait, Kevin's already having an affair?
No, I'm saying it was a very nice affair. I sent a gift on behalf of all of us.
Oh, good, good, good.
I put all
that'll
of
mean a lot to Kevin.
All of our names. He's mentioned several times to me.
He's got all the money.
Yeah, he's got a lot of money, but he's. I mean, I don't know how many times the guy's got to drop a hint that he wants a salad shooter. So I picked one up over the weekend.
Salad shooter and a grill, Daddy. That's all the guy needs.
That's all you need.
This story last week that Adele was going to do the Super Bowl halftime show. You said it. I said it. We said it. She doesn't dance. She doesn't dance.
She doesn't do anything.
You got. She sings unbelievably, but right. She stands there and sings. You need more than that at the Super Bowl. You need popping. You need lasers. You need dancing. You need craziness. So she said?
She said that she is not going to perform at the halftime show because she doesn't dance or anything like that. Her exact words said the Super Bowl is not really strictly about music. It's right. about spectacle.
Right.
And she said that that's not her. So she
really has, smart of her.
She has said that she declined. Said she appreciates it very much that she was asked. This is interesting because shortly after she made this announcement at a concert in Los Angeles at the Staples Center on Saturday night, the NFL and Pepsi, who sponsors the halftime show, put out a statement saying they never formally invited her.
Now, why would they be jerks?
I think they just don't want to look like they were
snubbed.
Like
anybody says no to them.
Like that they were snubbed by Adele. They don't want to look. So they said, we never formally invited her or anybody else. But everybody is saying there must have been some informal, talk. If we approach her, would she be interested?
Of course there was.
For her to even bring it up, she's not just going to bring it up for no
reason. She's not Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. She tells the truth.
That's right. So how crazy that even had to be brought up. So now if you want to get your rumor-o-meter back on again, likely to play the halftime show this year, Rihanna's name is probably top of the list.
Yeah, she should do it.
Or Maroon 5, they're saying, what might be possible.
Might both be good.
Maybe both.
Maybe
both, because we always have these big multi-performer things.
Yeah. Hey, before you go, has there been any response on TV to the Chicago Cubs' little oopsie they had last night?
I had not heard that. What is...
Aroldis Chapman, the flame-throwing reliever for the Chicago Cubs, was in big trouble and suspended for a period of time for domestic violence.
Oh, right.
Okay, keep that in your mind.
Right.
They make a deal for him to come to the Cubs. There's questions about whether or not he should be here. He's performed brilliantly since he's been here.
Yep.
But last night, even though the Cubs did not come back, in the bottom of the ninth after he got the Cardinals out in order in the top of the ninth, the Cubs music system played a little bit of this song. Now, we can't play much of it because it's the only clean part we could find. Listen. Mm-hmm. That's right, Dean. They played Smack My Bitch Up.
Oh, no.
Yes. Yes, oh. As reported by multiple media sources, Smack My Bitch Up. Here are some of the lyrics, Dean, if I could share them.
Please.
Change my pitch up, smack my bitch up. Change my pitch up, smack my bitch up. Ay, 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 ay. Ee, 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 hey. Change my pitch up, smack my bitch up. Ah.
Wow.
You know, it's the type of thing you probably don't want to play in front of the kids anyway, let alone after the domestic violence guy walks off the mound.
I like how you do it as a more of a dramatic reading.
A little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like Orson Welles.
Yeah.
It's like Orson Welles
doing a dramatic reading. At 8:32, we have yet to receive a statement from the Cubs. By the way, I would love for the Cubs to go, internet rumor never happened. And we can prove that it never happened. But there are many sources, I respect personally, yeah, who have said it did, and they either saw it or were there.
Normally, I would be able to, just check the raw feed. But last night was an ESPN. The game was on ESPN, not on WGN.
Oh, okay.
So I don't have any. I don't have any secret way to hear what happened.
Well, tell the guys in the booth there. That's what you want your walk-on music to be now, in Channel 9.
What's it called?
Smack my bitch up.
Wow.
By Prodigy.
1997 hit, I'm told. Yeah.
Also, Steve, this just in, Judy Carn passed away in September of 2015.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
So,
well, no wonder she wasn't available.
We miss her greatly.
And we retract all the nonsense we've said in the last 10 minutes.
Best known for her phrase, suck it to me.
Right. And she did that with a Tony Bennett duet.
back in the 60s.
Very much like that was a 1960s version of Smack My Bitch. Sock It To Me. Same thing.
It just comes full just, circle.
Wow, I just realized
that. Oh, how serendipitous, which was another Tony Bennett hit. That, all right, I'll talk to you later.
Bye. Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
For the first time in 112 years, there's a gold medalist in golf at the Olympics, and his name is Justin Rose.
Gold medal for Rose, a gold medal for England, huh?
Great Britain with the gold medal. Last time it was Canada in men's golf. It's been quite some time. Worth the wait with this showdown in Rio today.
I think the guy that won for Canada in, what, 1908 is probably not with us anymore. I bet he has trouble hitting the big drivers with the giant heads. Kurt Byram was there for the Golf Channel. We're planning on Kurt connecting with us in a second. We had him and lost him and had him and lost him. And hopefully he's back. Is he in country now or is he still in Rio? He's still in Rio. Okay, so we've had some dicey phone lines to Rio in general. But hopefully we'll get Kurt back in a second. I think he's dialing in right about now. And then we've got some sound we have to play from the weekend. Trump will make his ISIS speech today, how he would handle ISIS in a Trump administration.
Okay, well, that's good. I mean, I want to hear that.
Yeah, issues.
Yeah, of course.
Remember what I said last week, though?
I know. I still don't.
Next 2 weeks, Trump gets out. He's a victim, and he can't do it. He's getting out the next 2 weeks.
I don't know, Steve. I don't see it happening.
Would it surprise you in this campaign season? Of course not.
It wouldn't.
Kurt Byram, my friend Kurt Byram from the Golf Channel, and Kurt has been in Rio. And, man, Kurt, the review by the players of this golf course, everybody seemed to love it, huh?
They absolutely loved it. It was in tremendous condition when they got down here and saw it for the first time, and it played well. You know, professional golfers are notorious for being, you know, nitpicky and hypercritical, and this week they had nothing but good things to say. I think everybody was really happy.
You know, it's funny. I don't know if you guys and your tech guys talked about it, but it didn't show great on TV. And part of it was a little bit distracting because the galleries were smaller, but the course didn't look as spectacular as it obviously is. And I don't know, you know, that's neither here nor there, just an observation.
Yeah, I think, well, I think it's, you know, it's built on the sand dunes there, not too far from the beach in the area that they built it. And it's, you know, it's supposed to look like a links style golf course, you know, and it's wide open. There are no trees. And actually, Steve, the galleries were off the charts, tremendous. They were sold out. They figure they only allowed 12,000 tickets, and then with all of the, you know, extra people that are involved in the tournament, they figured there were 15,000 people out there yesterday. And I know a lot of PGA Tour events that would love to have we had that kind of crowd every day except for one when it rained all morning one day.
Oh, that's great. I saw the crowd yesterday when Rose made his final putt, but that's great to hear the numbers were good every day.
Huge, huge galleries. It was by all accounts, I mean, all the executives from NBC and Golf Channel are down here, and by all accounts, they are thrilled with everything. They think it's a huge success.
Well, you guys did a great job calling it, and Justin Rose comes down at the end with Henrik Stenson, who won the Open Championship. And, man, what a great finish that is. You got the guy that won the U.S. Open a few years ago. He's had a really consistent, solid year this year, but is, you know, always a contender in Stenson. And you had that sort of punch-out thing we saw in the PGA. We saw it at the Open and saw it to some extent at the Olympics. So that was fun.
It couldn't have worked out better, especially for us on the TV side. I mean, you've got two major players, a guy who just won, you know, arguably the most important golf tournament in the world in the Open, Henrik Stenson. He led most of the way, and Justin Rose, you know, he's a top 15, top 10 type player. I think he just moved into the top 10 in the world again with that win. They got world ranking points, so it couldn't have worked out better. I mean, two guys really at the top of their game battling for gold medal, and you know, for any of the people out there that say it didn't matter, they should have been down here, you know, watching that, because I can guarantee you it mattered to those guys.
Yeah, we can't speak to, you know, the personal choices made by the top guys in the world, Jason Day included, and Dustin Johnson and things, because the hype certainly seemed like it was an appropriate choice to make if you choose to make it.
But I got to believe that was a tough one for those guys to watch if they were sitting on the couch watching it, because they know they could have been there.
No doubt about it. I mean, once we got down here, you know, because we were all kind of, we were all hearing the same stuff, the, you know, the security problems and the Zika, and, you know, it's just all the crap that seems like, it, you know, it's so negative before Olympics. And, you know, it was kind of that way when you heard all that stuff before they went over to Sochi a couple of years ago, and everything turned out fine over there too. And it's, once we got down here and we realized, you know, what was going on down here and how it was set up, and it was just like, there, none of those were a problem. Zero. I walked on the ground for, well, I walked two practice rounds and 4 days of the competition. I never saw a mosquito, literally never saw a mosquito. And we're staying inside the red zone, so we're secure at the hotel that we're at. But still, I know people that are staying at other hotels that are going out to dinner. They're going down to the beach to watch the volleyball. They're walking around. Other than Lochte, I haven't heard of one problem. I really haven't. And the athletes, the golfers that I've talked to have had a blast. They're going to all the events, and they're just having a great time.
The slow start by Ricky Fowler after a great Saturday round, I didn't even notice. How did he finish on Sunday?
He didn't do anything on Sunday, really. Never really got in contention. Kuchar's the one that made the big charge on Sunday. He made, I think he birdied like four out of his last five holes on the front nine, and kind of, and then he eagled 10. And so he was the guy that had made the huge move into contention. Fowler was really popular down there, down here, though. He had huge crowds following him around. You know, he was the one guy that just from day one embraced going to the Olympics 100%. Yep. And he went to all the events that he could. He stayed in the Athletes Village, which is right next to my hotel. And, you know, he just went full bore for the whole experience. It was very popular.
Yeah, cool. And Kuchar had a great quote afterwards. Didn't he say something like, "I've never been so happy to finish third"?
That was a good line, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was. And, you know, I saw his wife, Sibby. She was following around. And, you know, when she finally got to where he was after he got the bronze medal, and the hug that she gave him and the kiss and everything, it was different than even if he had won a tournament. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just, you could see her emotions were a lot higher for him winning a bronze medal in the Olympics than it was if he'd have won at Hartford last week.
Yeah, pride of country.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And she was an athlete in college. She played tennis at Georgia Tech. She was a heck of a tennis player. So she gets the whole athlete thing.
Well, I know you got to run, but I appreciate the coverage. And I don't know if you get to stay for a little bit and see some of the events still, or if you're headed home, but nice job by you as always, just killing it on the Golf Channel.
I'm going to be here next week for actually this week now, starting the women go this week. I'm here for them.
That's right, of course.
I'm going to go watch a few events today. Yeah.
All right, buddy, have fun. And remember, most of your luggage should be souvenirs for Dr. Most and me.
All right, Steve, I'll see if I can snag you a shirt.
All right, buddy, all the best. Thanks. That's a doctor. That's Dr. Kurt Byram. That's Dr. Byram. That's a great Kurt Byram. At Kurt Byram, C-U-R-T-B-Y-R-U-M.
You know, my cousin's covering the Olympics, and he ran into Justin Rose in the Olympic Village, said good luck to him. So now he's claiming, because the next day he won, so now he's claiming it was him that.
Oh, there's no question. Christian Vandeveld is the key to America's golf, or to the Brits' golf success.
Yes.
Hey, wait a minute. Why wasn't he talking to our guys?
I know, really. Oh, well, you know, he hangs around with a lot of the Brits covering the cycling.
I bet he does.
So I don't know.
Watch him.
The barbarians of ISIS.
We have to get ISIS.
We will defeat ISIS.
We have to knock out ISIS.
I know more about ISIS than the generals do, believe me.
ISIS is honoring President Obama. He is the founder of ISIS. He's the founder of ISIS, okay? He's the founder.
We don't even really know who the leader is.
It's unbelievable. Ah, he's terrific. As Hillary Clinton continues to not tell the truth about pretty much anything that comes out of her mouth, Donald Trump continues to be a babbling baboon who continues to babble. Over the weekend, Corey Lewandowski, who was fired in part because Paul Manafort, the Elvis impersonator, who's running the Trump campaign through Corey Lewandowski. Corey Lewandowski works for CNN now, but is still an ardent Trump supporter, retweeted a link to a New York Times story about Paul Manafort helping the bad guys out that screwed up Ukraine. just goes on and on. And Ivanka Trump is overseas with a woman rumored to be Vladimir Putin's girlfriend.
Vacationing.
You can't make it up. These are facts. And today, Trump will do his ISIS speech. But let's back up for a second. As Trump wasted more time over the weekend blaming the media for his troubles as opposed to stomping on Hillary for all the mistakes that she's making and continues to make, Mike Pence told Fox News that Trump's comments going back to the Second Amendment and really previous comments as well. Remember, Trump said, oh, no, I was being sarcastic, but not that sarcastic. Well, where are you, Mr. Vice President, to be?
You and he spent a day defending his remarks, saying that they were serious. Now Trump says that he was being sarcastic. So, Governor, which is it?
Well, I think he was being very serious, and he was making a point that needs to be made, that there is no question that the failed policies of President Barack Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton in the wider Middle East created a vacuum within Iraq in which ISIS was able to arise. There's simply no question.
But then why is he saying he was sarcastic?
Well, he was making a very serious point. And look, it's so important.
Why did he say he was being sarcastic?
Yeah, well, he was making a very serious point. Donald Trump has a way of talking that gets people's attention, and it's drawn attention to a very important issue.
John Oliver, they really should get together and figure out what they're going to say. John Oliver last night on This Week Tonight on Trump's ISIS remarks. Listen.
His campaign must have been pleased to keep him disciplined and on message for an entire hour. Unfortunately, the rest of the week quickly devolved because the very next day he made a chilling suggestion that Second Amendment people could stop Hillary Clinton. And before people could even get over that, he'd moved on to this.
President Obama, he is the founder of ISIS. He's the founder of ISIS. And I would say the co-founder would be crooked Hillary Clinton.
Wow. I tell you what, I will give Trump this. At least he made sure to include Hillary as co-founder. Hashtag feminism, hashtag ISIS with her. Now, clearly, what he just said is absolutely absurd. But even when people tried to help him reframe it, he doubled down.
Conservative radio host Hugh Hewitt pressed him on that.
I know what you meant. You meant that he created the vacuum, he lost the peace.
No, I meant he's the founder of ISIS.
But he's not sympathetic to them. He hates them. He's trying to kill them.
He was the founder.
He's so insistent. He's like a guy drowning but waving off a lifeboat saying, get out of here, I'm very buoyant. I'm the most buoyant. Everybody talks about my buoyancy. I'm a tremendous floater.
And it goes on and on and on. Oh, you can't make it up.
An animal!
Dan Hampton anchors a young Bears defense.
An animal!
It's time for Dan Hampton.
All season long, the little hamster will be on with us. Brought to you by your Northwestern Indiana and, of course, your Chicagoland Chevy dealers, ChevyDriveChicago.com. Ham joins us now. Hello, buddy.
Well, it's great to be back with you, Steve-O. And I'll tell you, just like the newspaper said, nobody freak out yet. But we're starting to wonder, aren't we? And, you know, I'm kind of a history buff. Let's go back, 1310. Is that a year anything significant happened? No. 13 plays, 10 yards.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I'm like, we got to poke a little fun at him because it's not time to hit the reset panic button. But my goodness, that was a garbage fire the other night.
Yeah, and I was going to ask the question, but I think I already know the answer. Did anything, any facet of the game, anything outside of the final whistle look positive to you?
No. And, you know, let's go a step further. You know, and you and I, we've talked about this over the course of the last year and a half, since John Fox was hired. It's almost like the final stage of John Fox's coaching implementation, whether it's offense, defense, whatever, is the pronouncement that, oh, there's no need to worry. I'm starting to worry. And, you know, let's be realistic. The offense was abysmal. The defense looked, you know, uninspired. You know, at some point, the preseason means a lot to different players in different meanings and forms and fashion. You know, the young guys, you want to show off. Kevin White, he looks great in his suit. I can go down to Oak Street Beach and get a bunch of guys who look great in their suit. Show me something. Show me some special talent that made you such a high first-round pick. Show me, you know, Jay Cutler, you know, do something to get the offense going, the inspired. You know, I don't want to see the running backs fall down like Hillary Clinton. I mean, everybody on this team has got a question mark over them as we look at, you know, the second week of the preseason. And that's not, you know, that could be okay when you're in your initial run with the team. But now we're supposed to have, you know, made a lot of decisions and things are supposed to be settled, and it doesn't look that way.
So the Cutler piece of this, he's got a very limited view, as NFL quarterbacks do in the beginning. How much of his trouble was Cutler, and how much of it was zero protection?
Yeah, you know, maybe the best player on the team, Kyle Long, is beat for a sack. 1 out of 13 plays. That's not good enough. And you're right. You know, everybody's always screaming, you know, Cutler stinks. Well, if he's getting clubbed in the head and he has no receivers getting open downfield, it's hard for him to look like he knows what he's doing. So, again, you know, and here they are in Foxborough. They're going to practice with the New England Patriots today. So let's hope they engage, because I went down to training camp. They weren't doing a whole lot. A lot of their players that needed to prove things, i.e. Kevin White, Alshon, McPhee, they weren't even practicing. So, you know, maybe it's time everybody gets that sense of urgency that all of us Bear fans are saying, hey, we know it's a meaningless game, but we can tell when somebody's getting their butt kicked, and everybody got our butt kicked the other night. So we're getting a little bit perturbed about it.
I think the alarming thing happened. We were talking about this a little bit Friday morning, and I guess it all gets back to the offensive line performance in this game, but the lack of any kind of a running game at all. And this is a team which is trying to get used to the idea of being without Matt Forte going forward. And you've got some talent there clearly with Langford, and we'll see what these other guys can do. But they didn't show anything in this game. At what point do you start to get concerned about that?
Well, we've heard John Fox say the running game will not only be emphasized but featured. Well, let's see it. And there's you mentioned Matt Forte, and I've always said he's a good player, a real good player, but he's not a great player in the sense that you got to sell out and keep him at all cost. And you know, and I know, the whole thing came down to money, and they felt like going with this little platoon of running backs with Langford and the rest of them, they wouldn't miss a beat. But the Matt that I'm worried about is Matt Slauson. As you know, when they released him in the offseason, I was up in arms. I thought he was our best player in offense last year. He played two positions. He would be so valuable to us now, but he's gone. And so you got to put that on Ryan Pace. You know, I know that, you know, you're always thinking, well, we're going to get young players. They're going to improve and step up. Well, we got some young players that have to step up. And Cody White here at left guard, I mean, it could be a festering problem there in the middle of the line. Bobby Massey is a monster. Charles Leno Jr. said that he has gotten better and he's more prepared this year. We know that Kyle Long is healthy. He's back at right guard. They should have been better. I don't know why it's taken them so long to answer some questions. But like I said, you know, the offensive line is about cohesive, you know, unison. And if they don't have it going yet, they've got another couple of weeks. But then, like I said, it's time to start worrying.
So you've gone through games like this. Maybe not the first exhibition game, but you've gone through games where every single thing went wrong. What went on in the week following for you? What's going on in the week following in practice now? Because my concern is the lack of a sense of urgency.
Absolutely. And you know, it starts at the top, and that's Fox. And then it starts with the quarterback. And Jay Cutler doesn't need to be, you know, kind of smirking and skunk facing a little bit. Hey, it's time for him to start barking and jumping on people because obviously nobody was doing their job. Well, in the week, you know, succeeding the preseason game where we didn't play well or a certain facet didn't play well, guess what? It not only was hammered and emphasized in meetings, we had to do extra work in practice, drive sleds, do extra pass rush, whatever it was. But it's almost like, hey, we expect you to be a professional. You need to show up ready to go, and you weren't. So guess what? Now it's our job to make sure you're ready. And let's hope this coaching staff will do that. Now, I'm not that worried about the defense. Vic Fangio has gotten a lot better players, and he will – I think he's going to be, you know, okay. But, you know, not only the receivers, you know, when Alshon basically misses all of camp and then makes a gratuitous appearance where he catches one pass, and Kevin White is kind of, oh, well, I don't – you know, I didn't do anything last year. Let me run a few routes and show you that I can run. But that's not enough. We need a bigger sense of urgency on the offensive side. And, again, it starts at the top. That's John Fox. That's Dow Loggins, the offensive coordinator. That's Jay Cutler. Let's see if they can kind of crank it up a little bit this week.
What are you looking forward to more in New England this week, seeing the reunion between the Bears and Martellus Bennett or getting a chance to see Shay McClellan in action again?
I can't wait to watch Shay McClellan.
I had a feeling you would say that, Amp.
Oh, my goodness. You know, if I could, I would try to play for free this week if I was an offensive lineman. Say, okay, forget paying me. I'm ready to go.
You're going to look so good on film.
Hey, now, like I said, if they play Shay McClellan, everybody's going to think we're the greatest offensive line in football this week.
That's tremendous. Well, I can't wait to get going for real, but we will follow it week to week as this rolls out. In the powder puff preseason that is the National Football League until we get the real football. Hamp, all the best, buddy. Enjoy the day.
Well, it won't be long. OB and Kaz will be back at it, and it's, just a few weeks. Let's hope they can get this thing kind of squared away before we get to the season.
You guys keeping Mark Carmen this year?
Did he? Yeah,
absolutely.
He'll be
you know,
there.
Brave men run in his family, so we're keeping.
That's the great Dan Anthony, Hall of Famer. We're back after this on 720 WG. And, of course, whenever Ham's on, it's courtesy of ChevyDriveChicago.com, your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
See, I got a flat butt.
Do you?
Yeah, I got the white man flat butt disease.
Oh, boy. I got to tell you, that sounds awful.
Is that a bad thing?
Well, it's not great for pants because, you know, honestly, you know, I've thought about butt implants, but you just don't know what you're getting. No, I do have the flat butt disease. So, Dave, you've got a terrific tushy. Don't think I haven't checked it out.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, geez, look at the butt on that. Yeah. He must work out.
Shake that healthy butt. Baby got ballet.
Saturday night, we were at Bell Sal Banquets. Was it Friday night?
Friday.
You know, Friday night, we had such a good time, we stayed till Saturday. Friday night, we were at Bell Sal Banquets, stand-up comedy. The Steve Cochran World Tour continues. And thanks again, everybody at Bell Sal, BELLESALLE. Banquets. I'm just giving them a plug here because they're nice people and they do really nice work. It's a beautiful facility.
Oh,
it's weddings
beautiful.
Mostly and things. Yeah. But we took over one of the rooms, dressed John DeCoste as a bride, and threw a little show. So John and Mike Toomey and I entertained the crowd. And afterwards, met a ton of listeners, just so many nice people that came up to me. But the reason we wanted to share with you the flat butt extravaganza is one woman, and I'm guessing she was about 80, because she told me, you know I'm 80.
Is that what she said?
Yeah, she'd had a couple of cocktails.
Yeah.
And she came up to me to take a picture, and as we were standing there taking a picture, I put my arm around her, as I always do. Not with her, I mean in general. I'll put my arm around you for taking my picture.
Right.
Taking pictures.
And then she reached her hand behind me and she grabbed my butt.
Really? Yeah. Are you sure it was her hand?
Yeah, we're the only two in the picture. I had to stop for a second because that is a move that DeCoste will make.
Right.
And
or someone will walk by
butt.
And kind of.
And she said, "You don't have much of a butt, do you?" And I said, "Well, no, doctor, I don't."
A little grab in action.
So, just want you to know when you come out to see a Steve Cochran show, it's a full service clutch and grab if you're a listener.
Yeah. Hijinks and merry.
That's what I'm talking about. Uh-huh. Weird thing was, I went out in the parking lot, Ryan Lochte was being robbed. It's crazy.
Oh.
No, that's not true. Let's see if we can get Ryan Lochte back on the phone from Brazil later on in the program. 9:41, we continue from the world's greatest office, the Showcase Studio, the Allstate Showcase Studio, live on Michigan Avenue. Broadway in Chicago is going to have a very special night tonight. Andrea, you have a lot of good friends at Broadway in Chicago.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite events of the night, and this is really, really cool, Steve. It gives you an opportunity. First of all, it's free. It's Millennium Park. You can't beat that beautiful summer night, but it gives you a chance to see a little bit of every play that Broadway in Chicago is going to be hosting for the next season.
And they're all going to be performed in one act by Travis Taylor. He's learned all shows
That's right.
in Chicago. The star of Phantom is here, Chicago native. Nice to see you.
Hey, thanks
for
having
me. And I'm a fan.
Yeah. Of Phantom of the Opera?
Well, of Phantom, but also of your performance.
Oh, thank you.
You're tremendous.
Thank you very much.
When you went to Roosevelt, what did you want to do?
I studied musical theater. I got a
BFA. So was Broadway the goal?
Broadway, yeah. Broadway theater, Broadway and Chicago theater were what I wanted to do.
And what was your break? I mean, who discovered you?
Well,
or is it just do auditions?
I started here my senior year when I graduated. I started doing Into the Woods with Porchlight Music Theater. And then I continued to do regional theater around the work with Drury Lane and Chicago Shakespeare Theater and Marriott. And then I got picked up by Phantom last year when I was doing Beaches at Drury Lane.
The message for the kids... Because, you know, we're all about the kids. Yeah. Because kids are big on talk radio. The message for the kids is, if you have that dream and you want to be an actor, mm-hmm. you want to do musical theater, you want to do anything in life, but certainly what you're doing, you got to do the work.
Mm-hmm. Practice.
You
got to
do the work. You got to study, but you also got to go out. You got to work. You got to do the auditions. You got to mm-hmm. network. You got to make the connections.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, the most persistent people are the people that continue to work and yell. I mean, and kindness. That goes a long way, too.
Do you know when you nail an audition?
Generally you feel good afterwards if you had a good audition, but I mean, honestly, like half the time you walk out thinking that you were the worst thing in the room.
And you get the part.
And you get it. Yeah.
So have you ever felt like I absolutely crushed that? I can't wait to call everyone I know and you don't get it?
Yeah, and my agent calls me and they're like, you were terrible. What were you doing in there? Did you study theater? No.
Because, you know, I know this from the incredible five or six movies I did in the 90s and the incredible bit parts I did.
Oh, wonderful.
Did.
I got to check those out.
Yeah, they're tremendous. It won't take you long. It's about a three-minute film festival.
Great.
But the fact is, you go in and audition, and it's got to be different in musical theater. Because mm-hmm. you go in and you audition for a film, and it's a non-lead, you know, role.
Yeah, bit parts.
It's who wants to work with you, right?
Yeah.
It's how you present yourself in the room. Mm-hmm. But there's got to be a component of that for what you do as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I mean, talent goes a long way, but, you know, people want to know that during the rehearsal process, you're going to be fun to work with. And that's
because they're spending a lot of time with
you. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
I get the singing part seems to be important.
Oh, big time.
So you do have to be able to sing.
Yes.
I mean, that seems fairly crucial.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of know right away, luckily with musical theater, if, the producers and directors know if you're going to make it or not as soon as you open your mouth.
And by the way, Travis is modest, but his concept that turned into Hamilton was something else.
It was fantastic. Yeah, it was a great idea.
Really, I was very impressed.
I didn't want to brag, but
it really took off.
I'm a really good writer.
Juan Manuel. I always wonder when you see, you know, they have the call or the casting call for an actor and they put, you know, in the description, if you can sing, dance, tap, has there ever been anything that you think, oh, I can do two out of the three things, but I'll...
Or that you've just flat out lied about to get the audition.
Fake it till you make it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm not the greatest tapper, but I will say I did tap on my knees and as Lord Farquaad in Chicago Shakespeare's production of Shrek.
So, you could pull a muscle.
But I couldn't do it on my feet.
Right. But your knees
special
can tap
skills.
Like nobody's
That's
business.
That's right. Absolutely.
All right, so explain what's going on tonight.
So Broadway in Chicago is tonight. It's the free summer concert. Features 10 Broadway performances. this evening, and you'll be there as well, doing a bit of a performance from Phantom.
Yeah, do Music of the Night. Yeah.
Oh, I love
that. It's a phenomenal song.
Yeah.
Yeah. And let's bring out Andrew Lloyd Webber, who's here right now as well. I'm sorry, you must be still parking.
No, it's an exciting season, though. Phantom, Shrek's coming back, Carole King's coming back, and of course, Hamilton is coming in September as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be very cool.
Stomp. Stomp's be back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're looking at the list. You don't have to.
Oh, okay.
Something Rotten, which is a new original comedy. Anyways, tonight at 6:15, and... you're invited. Where am I going specifically?
But right in Millennium Park.
What's a big park?
Big theater, right? It's the J. Pritzker Pavilion.
Oh,
the
big pavilion. Yeah. It's perfect.
You can get the picnic, sit on the grass. Yeah. You can sit in the seats. It's really a cool, cool experience.
And, you know, I'm fairly tall. I'm 6 feet tall. So if the seats fill up, I'll just wait in the back. And
yeah, on
for
the lawn.
A reasonable fee, I'll hold you on my shoulders.
Perfect.
Yeah. As long as you listen to the show.
A great idea.
Well, Trevor sings, you know, his Phantom song.
So what's I don't want to wrap this up too quickly here, but what's after this for you? I mean, do you know what you're doing after Phantom?
Of the Opera? You know, I don't right now. I mean, I would like to do this show for a while, for as long as I can. And then possibly New York. I've never tried New York because I've just had my theater career in Chicago and this national tour.
Yeah, but killing it in Phantom. I would think that New York's aware of you.
Yeah, oh yeah. I think so. Well, oh yeah, but I think
that, oh yeah.
No, they are.
I wrote Hamilton.
No, I think that you know, I'm starting to get familiar with some of the people in New York, but not many. So I think I'm going to try that as soon as
is it scary? Are you pumped or both?
Yeah, it's super nerve wracking because I don't know too many people. It's a city that I haven't lived in, and you know, it's the big deal. It's the big fish as far as what you dream about doing when you graduate. So,
but I have a sense there is a tremendous amount of, you know, it's show business, but I have a sense there's a tremendous amount of respect for the Chicago theater community by the New York theater community.
Yeah, I think there's mutual respect on both ends, for sure.
Yeah.
And I felt that way as soon as I joined the tour. You know, people, from what people say about Chicago actors in New York, it's, you know, I think there's definitely a mutual respect there.
How annoying are you at home when you're just walking around singing, trying to learn a part?
On a level of like 1 to 10 or... like 7. 7.5.
I have a tremendous amount of respect for
my shower singing is amazing.
Maybe write that. I have a tremendous amount of respect for what you do because it takes talent, it takes work, but to be able to deliver as an actor and sing, that's not easy. It's not easy.
Are you saying you can't do it?
I salute you. I absolutely can't do it. I can't do it. I'm willing to stand behind the fact that I can't do it. It's Travis Taylor. You got any social media you want to throw out if people want to follow you?
At Phantom Tour. I don't have any social media, but follow us on tour.
I could actually show that to you if you don't know how it works.
Okay, thank you.
You said at Phantom Tour?
Yeah.
All right. And tonight you'll be there. And
6:15.
You're going to be there at 6:15, and we're going to see a little bit of each show.
A little bit of each show.
Can we buy tickets tonight?
It's free.
It's free.
Yeah,
free
but
concert.
I mean, what if we want tickets to the show tonight? What if we're so inspired?
Oh, Phantom of the Opera?
Yeah, we're just going to go right on the app tonight? Is that the thing we're going to do tonight?
Phantom of the Opera start. When's the run? It starts December 14th is when Phantom starts.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, you go to this. You're going to get pumped up tonight. You go to this, and you're going to go, I want tickets, and I want them now. I want tickets to the show.
So yeah, go online.
So you go to Broadway in Chicago, broadwayinchicago.com.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
That's right.
Cool. Almost pulled a muscle trying to plug this. Travis, great to see you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming over. It is 9:53. We're talking a lot about the Olympics for obvious reasons. I don't know if you caught this. A couple of Irish guys in their post-race interview, they're brothers. They're Paul and Gary O'Donovan. How Irish does that sound? Paul and Gary O'Donovan. Paul and Gary O'Donovan and their post-race interview. Do you know the O'Donovans?
I don't know the
O'Donovans. Dave, do you know the O'Donovans?
I do not know the O'Donovans.
I don't even know what race they were in. What did the O'Donovans win the silver medal in? Let's go to the research department now where Dave is figuring this out.
I'm feverishly trying to figure this out.
It's Paul and Gary O'Donovan. They won a silver medal in, and it's two of them racing. Oh, was it double riding?
Rowing.
Was it double riding on a bicycle?
Rowing.
It was rowing.
There's no tandem bike events.
That would be funny, though, wouldn't it?
Double riding. Double riding be cool. Here are the O'Donovan brothers. Listen.
Guys, good afternoon. Congratulations. You did us proud today. How are you feeling?
Hi, lads. How are things?
Mr. Craig.
We're in Rio.
Yeah.
The background might look superimposed, but it's very real.
It is, yeah.
Certainly.
That's all there.
Lads, listen, Paul, what has the last few hours been like for you?
I've been shooken off now, to be honest, since the racing. I'm a bit tired now and the legs are like jelly, but yeah, I suppose we did a bit of celebrating and did the podium thing and got to put on the podium pants as well, so that was quite nice, and saw the mother and the father and a few other people and took a few pictures and that, and then I had to go and do this doping control thing, so I was there for an hour or two trying to take a pee then into a cup for them, so after about 10 litres of water as well, so it's full up now, to be honest.
We'll be fairly tired now. We haven't had a bite to eat since... After the weigh-in, we had a bread roll with some Nutella. And I'm fairly hungry now, but I believe they're on their way with some pizzas for us.
He had to pee in a cup, and now he's getting a pizza.
We had to pee in a cup, and then we had a bread roll with some Nutella.
That's good.
Well, you Donovan brothers. What's funny is you almost need, like, Rosetta Stone to understand them. It takes, like, the first 20 seconds of the conversation, and they go, what?
And then it all makes sense after that.
So, yeah, very, very good.
It's like when they put the words up on the screen,
sure.
You know, to translate, but they're speaking English.
Saw the mother and the father and...
The mother and the father. You know, my brother-in-law, Ian, is 147% Irish. And he's a fabulous guy. He speaks mostly English now.
That's a lot of Irish.
But, you know, I've known him for, what, 13 years? I just nod.
The mother and the father.
Oh, we had a bread roll with Nutella.